Welcome to Your Home with Team Gale at Coldwell Banker Seacoast Advantage, the show for buyers, sellers, owners, and investors. We're here to give sage real estate advice and take your calls regarding buying, selling, and owning your home. Brought to you by Alpha Mortgage.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Your Home with Team Gale. I'm your host today, Tom Gale, and I'm with Mark Jabley, the president of Above and Beyond Energy, who will be talking to us today about how to make your home more energy efficient. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning.
And as always, this is an interactive show, so if you have any questions out there, feel free to give us a call on the studio lines at 332-6390. Or if you need a realtor right now, you can call one of my team members. We have a duty agent available to you at 910-541-1212. So I have my green designation as a realtor, and so this is a topic that I'm excited to talk about. It's something that I'm very familiar with, and I like saving people money. So this is a show that will hopefully help everybody be able to do that, because using less energy not only lowers your power bill, but it means that the power plants have to use less fuel, so that's better for them. But spending just a couple of bucks literally can save you a lot of money over the long term, and so we'll be talking about some of those things. Before we get started, though, Mark, you want to tell us a little bit about your company?
Sure, yeah. So Above and Beyond Energy started in 2007, and we have grown at a pretty good clip for the last 6 years, providing ENERGY STAR home certifications for builders, doing energy audits for existing homes, helping homeowners make their houses more comfortable and energy efficient, and doing, with the new energy codes, doing energy code testing, blower door test, duct test, things like that, and doing some lead for homes projects. And yeah, that's.
And what areas do you cover?
Well, we cover, we do go as far as New Bern and Greenville, but primarily we service the Jacksonville, Wilmington, New Hanover, Pender, Brunswick County areas, and okay. We do go as far as Myrtle Beach as well.
Okay, all right. And you mentioned builders, so I'll address that real quick. I mean, so right now every new home is required to get like a blower door test. Is that correct?
Well, there is a path around that. They have an option. They can either do a blower door test, or they can show compliance that they've met a certain visual inspection, which is a list of things that they have to do. And if they do those things, they will pass the blower door test. If they don't do those things, they probably won't pass the blower door test.
Gotcha. And a blower door test, can you explain everybody kind of what that is?
Sure. It's kind of the poster child of our industry. It's a big red door, typically red, and it inserts into any exterior door. And it basically would close all the other doors and windows in the home. And it basically depressurized the home to give us a nice pressure difference so that we can compare the air leakage for this home to any other home, so we can determine how leaky a home is. And we don't want them necessarily extremely tight to where they don't have any air passing through them, but certainly we don't want egregious air leakage passing through the homes as well. So, you know, nice tight home will certainly make homes more comfortable and durable and energy efficient.
Okay. And so basically it's a fan that kind of sucks the air out, essentially, right?
Yes.
And then you followed up by with a thermal imaging camera, right?
Yes. We'll often use the blower door in conjunction with a thermal imaging camera, which will help really just kind of make a worst case creation in the home, so we can kind of see where the building is failing and identify what we might do to improve the structure.
So those cameras, kind of like if it's hot, it'll be, you know, orange or whatnot. If it's cold, it'll be blue. So in the winter, you know, when they suck all the air out and it's actually trying to pull in air past the closed window and the closed door and through the attic and whatever else, you'll see those blue spots in the winter or those hot spots in the summer, and then you'll know which areas, you know, are those leaky spots.
That's right. So it's really just a good tool to help us identify, you know, the hot spots or the cold spots and where the envelope is essentially not performing like it should.
Okay. And one thing that I'll say too is, obviously the best time to make your home energy efficient is when it's being constructed, because it's very hard for you to go into the walls after the fact or whatnot. But there are plenty of things that you can do afterwards.
That's right. Once the sheetrock goes up in a home, it changes the complexity significantly to do anything about it. There's a number of common areas in homes that, you know, that really should be addressed and in every home. And if we can get to those areas before the sheetrock, then it really does. It's the right sequence to get these things done. It makes it a whole lot easier to make improvements. And then once the sheetrock's up, we can still make a lot of those improvements, but it gets significantly harder to get to those spaces and do it without, you know. And then if you have, you know, furniture and things that you have to work around, that even complicates it further. So,
yeah, that is very true. And I know that I called you myself a few years ago to have you do a home energy audit at my house because I was felt like my power bill was higher than it should be. And so I had you come out and do that, and you definitely did find some areas where there was not enough insulation or no insulation in a couple of spots in my attic and whatnot. So it was nice to be able to do that. Can you give everybody like a price range? It probably varies depending on, you know, the size of the home and all sorts of stuff. But I mean, if you somebody wanted to get a home energy audit, is there like kind of a ballpark figure that you can give people?
Yeah, it's kind of that $300 to $600 range, depending on a variety of factors. Certainly.
Okay. And one thing that I planned on looking up and didn't get to is I see that Progress Energy seems to be touting that they can do stuff like that or whatever. Is that, are you familiar with that?
Yes. So Progress Energy is a great partner and resource for homeowners as well as home energy rating professionals. So they offer incentive money to homeowners to make improvements. And essentially, they require a whole list of things to be done to the homes in order to capture that incentive. But all those things are just going to make the homes more comfortable, durable, energy efficient. And essentially, the rebate money that they provide will really go towards paying for those air sealing services. So it ends up kind of they end up paying for all those upgraded things where you get the insulation, but it's really important. One thing is if you just insulate your ceiling, for example, there really are steps that should be taken before you do that, and that's what I'm talking about with the air sealing. We want to basically make the whole ceiling plane of the home effective, where air leakage is not just passing right through the sheetrock in the ceiling. Because if we just put insulation there and then after a couple years we go look at that insulation and you start seeing how dirty it is, that's really a sign that it's just filtering the air. And so we want to use air sealing things like foam and caulk to kind of seal all gaps and things like that. And then once the insulation goes in on top of an air sealed or well air sealed ceiling plane, then it really does make for an effective lid for the home.
And so that's one of the things that you do as a part of the home energy audit is you look at all those types of things and make those types of recommendations, right?
That's right. So primarily what we do is test and inspect, and we'll provide a report. We have, just out of a necessity to provide services, we've kind of broadened our range to actually get in the attics and do some of that air sealing work as well, even though that's not maybe our primary business model, but we've done it out of necessity, and we've had good results with it.
Okay, and so let's get into some of the things that, you know, I will kind of go from cheapest and easiest for people to do maybe on their own all the way up to the kind of big and expensive items that would make a difference in someone's power bill. So, you know, caulking is probably, I would think, the least expensive option that really, you know, it's the 80-20 rule of, you know, if it doesn't take a lot of work or a lot of money, you know, you might as well go ahead and knock those things out. So what types of things would people want to caulk probably?
Well, yeah, so, and you're right, the caulking and the foaming, that's the easiest to do usually, and it's the lowest cost. And so that's absolutely where we typically start. Improving the air leakage essentially is what we're trying to do. So that blower door number will be less, you know. So we'll usually do a test in the beginning, and then we'll do the work, or somebody will do the work, and then we'll test in the end to see how, you know, so we can quantify the improvements. But certainly caulking and foaming all gaps in top plates, without getting too technical, but you know, like penetrations from wires and so forth going through the wall systems into the attic, all those things need to be sealed up properly with just caulk and foam, and then it really will, you know, cut down the air leakage. And that really is probably the most cost-effective thing you can do, not to mention Duke Energy Progress is providing incentives for that.
And you know, a thing of caulk is a couple of bucks. So, I mean, it's not a significant investment, and it takes an afternoon to do, you know?
That's right. I mean, you're really just talking about labor.
So, and like, I'm not a handy person. I would love to be, but I am terrible at doing complex things. But I know that as a result of your home energy audit, I was able to caulk around the outlets and my can lights and all those types of things to, you know, help make a difference, as far as that goes. And then next, it's not something that most people would probably do themselves. But you kind of touched on it earlier, would be insulation is probably a big one for people. They might not have enough or maybe missing in spots for insulation.
That's right. And again, it's so important for insulation to kind of be the last thing that you do it's usually the first thing that people do. They say, oh, well, I got new insulation. Now I want you to come out and take a look at it and see how we did. And it's like, oh, if you could have just waited a little while, we could have done a lot of things first. Now we kind of need to get all this beautiful insulation out of our way so we can make some improvements and then put it back. And that's usually a little more complicated, but certainly insulation is huge. If you kind of think about it like being on a boat on a cold winter day, if you just have a fleece or a sweater and you're going along the intercoastal waterway, that wind is cutting right through. It's just not enough. And also at the same time, if you just have a windbreaker, it's just not enough. You need that thermal layer. So you really need that thermal layer, that fleece jacket, in conjunction with that windbreaker to have an effective combination. It's the same thing for homes.
And like you said, the top plate, is where, a place where you would access in the attic. So you're right. If somebody blows in insulation and you guys have to trample all over it and push it out of the way, pushing the insulation back on blown insulation, it isn't going to be as fluffy. And that fluffiness is one of the things that you need. I tend to think there are probably people out there too that, because a lot of homes these days don't have a lot of storage space, people probably throw things up in the attic. And if they're squishing that insulation, it's probably doing the same thing as well. It really needs to be as fluffy as possible.
That's right. And we'll often do what we call fur up the attic floor so that we actually can get an R30 over, or under their storage. And also one comment about different types of insulation. We're talking about blown insulation where crews will come in and do a hose, just kind of fill the entire attic with blown in insulation. And the reason that is preferred over what's called bat insulation is the bat insulation really just rolls out between the joists, and so you don't have any insulation over those wood framing members, whereas the blown-in products will provide that continuous insulation over those framing members. So again, once the air sealing's done, then ideally we're using a blown-in insulation, whether or not it's fiberglass or cellulose, I don't really have a preference. And maybe you've got this up your sleeve to talk about foam insulation down the line.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. One of the things that I was going to mention next real quick was light bulbs. Switching out light bulbs is probably an easy way for people to not only save on the electric bill itself, but then, a regular incandescent bulb also throws up a lot of heat too. So, if you're heating or having to cool off and compensate for those, the CFLs and LED light bulbs can make a difference.
Absolutely. It's one of the biggest opportunities for improvement to homes is lighting, and particularly in new homes when we do what's called energy modeling, where we actually put all the data from the home into a software program and we'll run in what's called this energy model. We find that particularly in new homes where we improve the heating and cooling load so much that the largest piece of the pie is now lighting and appliances. And our new energy codes did require 75% of all bulbs in new homes to be what they call high efficacy, essentially high efficiency bulbs, which is, again, LED or the CFLs, those compact fluorescent swirly bulbs.
Well, and I know that a lot of people go with the CFLs because they're the least expensive, but I've started switching over at my house to the LEDs, and I really like those. The colors are a little bit nicer. They turn on instantly as opposed to having to warm up like some CFLs do. And, I have only had some of them in for a year or two at this point, but supposedly they last for 20 years. So that would be very nice if I don't have to change a bulb for 20 years.
That's right, and they don't have the mercury content, which is kind of the Achilles heel for those compact fluorescent bulbs.
Yep. So, and then one thing that I've also done at my house too is I put in motion sensors so that way when I walk into my laundry room, it automatically turns on. I'm typically carrying in or carrying out a load of laundry in my hands anyway, so I don't even have to reach over to the light. It turns on, and then after a minute of nobody being in there moving around, it just turns right off. I mean, you can manually turn it off, but those types of things I think make a big difference too. So I know that some families are better than others turning it off when you leave the room, but that can really add up.
Absolutely. And as I know that in my case, it's kind of like the plumber has leaky faucets. We can certainly make improvements in my house as well.
So, and those, by the way, those light switches are like $25, I think, a piece or whatever. So they're not, free, but like I say, over time, they definitely not only are convenient, but should save you some money and pay for themselves. A new thermostat was something else that I was thinking it would be kind of an easy thing for most people to swap out.
Sure, absolutely. Programmable thermostats, I mean, they can be as cheap as $20 from the home improvement stores, and then you can go up to $250 for the Nest thermostats, which I've been, you know, reviewing. I kind of like the concept of Nest, and I haven't used one yet, but I've got lots of builders that use them and speak highly of them, and people tend to really love them if they do.
So, well, and, you know, the programmable, if you're not there, then why are you bothering to heat and cool your house? You know, I mean, it just makes complete sense to go ahead and have those. And then, frankly, the nice thing that I like is when I set it to turn on about when I'm ready to come home, whatever, because it's just been running, it actually feels a little bit warmer in the winter or cooler in the summer because it actually has been running, you know, cooling it back off to where I want it to be. So it actually, like I say, just feels more comfortable typically. We're talking with Mark Jabley here about home energy efficiency. If you want to give us a call here at 332-6390. We are more than happy to take your call. Let me see what else we have on here. I have the hybrid water heater. There's also the instant water heaters and the solar water heaters. You got any opinions about any of those?
Well, not as much. I mean, they certainly will save you money. You're not paying to heat this. If you have an instant water heater, you're certainly not paying to keep that water hot all year round. So, and then of course, solar water heaters are fantastic, and there's some great incentives out there for solar. I think it's still 65% if you marry up the federal and state incentives. So, I think it's a great if you're in a tax bracket where you need to invest in your home as opposed to the federal government. So,
well, and the hybrid water heaters, I think that, you know, those will eventually be the standard here. And that's basically, it's got a smaller tank than your normal tank. And then what it has on top is just kind of a little mini heat pump. And so, you know, if you have one out in your garage, it's actually pulling the heat from your garage to heat your water, which is a lot more efficient than the just straight electric.
That's right. There's a federal standard, I think it implements in 2015, that's going to require all water heaters that are larger than 55 gallons, I think, to be hybrid water heaters. So,
well, and, you know, again, it makes sense. There's no reason to be heating your water all day, this huge tank, and keep it hot when you're not using it all day. So, you know, trying to find these other alternatives is nice. And the solar, just to touch on that in a little bit more detail, it actually has, like, what looks like a solar panel on your roof, but it's actually directly heating the water. They've got coils that are going underneath those, and that water cycles into a tank that, you know, stays warm because it's got the water that's being directly heated by the sun.
That's right.
So, I was going to mention the spray foam insulation. So if you want to go ahead and talk about that.
Well, sure. It's often a product that really does deserve, I think, a lot of deliberation, a lot of careful consideration for using it. But in general, there's what's called open cell spray foam, which is kind of like if you could stick your finger in it. It's not like hard, like a rock kind of thing. But then there's closed cell insulation, which is denser and harder, and they each kind of have their strengths and perhaps weaknesses, and they're possibly used in different environments, even within one house. Like, for example, you know, some people prefer to have open cell and the roof deck, but closed cell in the crawl space and that sort of thing. But both tend to the benefit is that they provide an air leak. They are an air barrier, so they will greatly tighten the home, and that's the primary benefit, is that they really tighten the homes up to where you're keeping the conditioned BTUs essentially inside the home's envelope.
Well, and I think that kind of a good example is when it sprays to fill the cavity in the wall, and this is one of those things where it's, you know, obviously much easier to do before you move into the house. You can still do it in the attic after it's you know, built, but if it's in the wall, you know, they have the cutouts there for your electrical outlet or whatever else, whereas if it's the spray foam actually, you know, goes right to every corner and just fills those gaps.
Well, that is true, but at the same time, any blown in insulation, so, and it's often confused to say spray foam is the stuff that expands at a really rapid rate, but blown in insulation, like cellulose is blown in typically, and fiberglass can be blown in walls as well, and it will do the same thing. It will fill the entire cavity, and in a wall system, as long as there's other air, I think you can have kind of careful special air sealing to make sure that, you know, that the cavities aren't allowing air to cycle through, and then you can have a very effective wall system with blown in cellulose or fiberglass as well.
And also, sometimes people use the radiant barrier sheathing. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. So essentially what it's doing is it's keeping the heat out of the attics. So it will keep, radiant barrier will drop the temperature in an attic on, say, a hot day by as much as 30 degrees or even more. So I don't know if I should get technical or not, but essentially there's three forms of heat transfer. There's radiant transfer, which is kind of like the heat traveling from the sun. And then when it hits the roof shingles, it transfers to conductive. And so this kind of like molecule, touching molecule, transfers that heat to the bottom side of the roof deck. And then if you don't have the radiant barrier roof sheathing, that it just, it can't keep conducting there since it's an empty space. And then it just radiates that heat into the attic. But a radiant barrier will prevent that heat transfer through, radiant. So it forces it basically to go back up and out.
And basically, I don't know what the material is, but I mean, it kind of looks like aluminum foil or something, and it just kind of reflects it back out of your attic.
That's right. And it just has a real hard, shiny finish that will not allow the surface to radiate and to pass the radiant heat through. So now if you touch it, you can feel it'll allow conduction right through it. So if you touch it, you'll actually feel it be hot, and it'll conduct right through to your finger. But if you keep your finger like an inch or so away, you won't feel any heat because it can't radiate that heat towards your hand.
Interesting. Obviously you can get new appliances. I'm not saying that you should necessarily go out and replace all your appliances, but there are always different opportunities out there for tax credits or whatever else sometimes. But you can purchase an Energy Star appliance would be a good way to do that. Dishwasher and washer and dryer and all that good stuff. And then also too, I don't know if you're familiar with like the crystal bond stuff that sometimes people can wipe on their windows. There, you actually, I guess, have to have a contractor do it, but I know that it cuts down on the UV light that goes in through everybody's windows. Is that something that you're familiar with?
Yeah, well, not terribly familiar with it, but essentially, reducing the amount of, in this climate zone anyway, reducing the amount of heat that's coming into our homes through our windows is a great thing. And so if you can use a product like that to keep that heat out, that's great.
And another thing that I like too is the kilowatt that you can plug into a specific outlet to see how much your particular appliance or TV or whatever else is using. It just tells you, like I say, how much it's using when it's on and when it's off, to find those phantom spots where you can't tell. There's also a TED 5000 is one where you can do it for the whole house. So, you can see at any given moment how much your house is using. So that way you don't have to just wait till you get your power bill at the end of the month, to see, how much power you used.
That's right. And like I said before, appliances and lighting typically have one of the largest pieces, particularly with new homes, but using a kilowatt meter to kind of go around and determine which appliances are pulling the most load is a great thing to do. And often that phantom load that we talk about is usually all of our TVs and entertainment centers and those sorts of things, because when you turn them off, they're really not off.
That's true.
They're still running and using a lot of power.
All right. Well, thanks to Mark Jabley from Above and Beyond Energy. You've spent another half hour with Your Home with Team Gale. We'll see you again next week. Thanks, Mark.
Yep, thank you.